a Monday drive, where over the weekend we got MVP odds for the NFL this year. Pat Mahomes, he's the betting favorite at nearly 4-1, followed by Lamar. Then there's Dak, which is nuts. But then again, never underestimate how many crazy Cowboy fans there are out there. Russell Wilson and Tom Brady are at 12-1. You could get Josh Allen at 20-1. But the best value for MVP is at 25-1 with Cam Newton. Just remember, awards aren't generally about excellence. They are about exceeding expectations. If it was all about excellence, Bill Belichick would have won the award sometime in the last decade. He hasn't. If it was all about how truly great you were, Mike Krzyzewski would have won Coach of the Year in the ACC, you'd think, sometime over the last 20 seasons. He hasn't. It's because people expect Belichick to be great. They expect Coach K to be awesome. So really, awards like the MVP, Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, it's not really about who the best in the sport is. It's about who's exceeded their expectations most. The last two winners, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes. Lamar was coming off a season he played half the year. Ravens won the division. He had a terrible playoff game against the Chargers. Nobody was expecting him to be a top quarterback who put the Ravens in the number one seed in the AFC and had the number one offense when the year began. No one saw that coming. In his second season doing that, he truly came off the radar screen and was awesome, took the league by storm. Pat Mahomes the same way. Mahomes was great in that one game he played while all the starters were resting for Kansas City in 2017. So much so, behind the scenes, Andy Reid knew what he had to move off of Alex Smith, who was a playoff quarterback. But none of us thought he'd throw 50 touchdowns. When he did that, there was no question. He's the MVP. The expectations are criminally low for Cam this year. 25-1. Cam's MVP odds are behind Kyler Murray and Josh Allen's and Dak Prescott's. Think about that. An MVP from 5 years ago who's with the Patriots and Bill Belichick has less MVP odds, lower MVP odds, than Josh Allen and Kyler Murray. It's astounding to me. They're playing in a division that they've won every year over the last dozen seasons. Also, don't forget this fact too. Voters are more drawn to the story than the stats. It's kind of like Johnny Cochran famously said when he was talking about the OJ case and the Michael Jackson cases he took. My goal isn't to line up all the facts for a jury to see. No, it's me trying to tell a better story than the prosecution's trying to tell. Tell a better story. That's why he got OJ Simpson off and got Michael Jackson off. He told a better story than the prosecution did. Voters are drawn to the story more than they are the stats. It's why I think if LeBron had a few more weeks of the season, if it didn't get halted because of coronavirus, he was going to track down Giannis. Not because Giannis had poor stats. Giannis, his stats far outweigh LeBron's. He's having a far better season. But Giannis's expectations are stacked up against Giannis from last year. And also, your age is factored into this too. There's a reason why Leo DiCaprio won the Oscar for The Revenant and not for Titanic and not for The Departed and not for Wolf of Wall Street. It's because, he'll be back. You got to wait your turn a little bit. You're going to have your moment eventually. Right? With Giannis, he's won an MVP. He's 24. If it's close, LeBron, we haven't given it to him in a half dozen years. You know, it's a better story that he's winning with the Lakers. Relating it back to Cam, Cam joining the Patriots is the best story in the NFL this year. It's the most compelling. Even more compelling than Brady in Tampa, whose expectations are through the roof. You heard it, 12-1. The Patriots, they have a worse division and a better infrastructure than they do in Tampa. Cam coming off an injury. Belichick without Brady. If they win this year, it's going to surprise some people. It's going to be the most compelling storyline there is. So I think that works to Cam's advantage. Plus, I think winning the division could be enough to put Cam over the top. I expect New England to do that. Best head coach he's worked with. Best play caller he's worked with. Best offensive line he's had in his career. And he's more motivated than ever. He's been putting out these Instagram videos, Robert. This is the latest one he put out last night, or at least the end of it. Gosh, I'm going to miss these, having to follow it with the Panthers week to week. But this was Cam on his IG.
Chosen say, Daddy, we going to Charlotte? I said, no, son. It's over with. We got another place we're going to. We're going north.
He's more motivated than ever.
Why do you act like you're not still going to cover Cam Newton? You're acting like, oh, I'm going to miss covering this. You're going to talk about him every time he does something.
It's true. We are. But yeah. I'm going to miss being there. I'm going to miss seeing it week to week.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to see anything week to week this year. So,
what do you mean?
You think they're going to let media come and talk to these people?
That's a great point.
Yeah, no one's doing anything.
Well, I mean, we might be able to go to the stadium. They just might not let us to the locker room or field level.
You could probably still get in the Patriots Zoom calls for Cam, honestly.
Don't give me any ideas.
Hey, what you doing over there?
Cam, what's going on with your drip? How does your Massachusetts drip compare to your Carolina drip?
He's like, hey, I remember you. Hey, aren't you Gosh Dram?
He's more motivated than he's ever been before. I was listening to the Tyler R. Tynes Cam Chronicles podcast series that dropped this morning, and Tyler's going to join us at 5:30. And it outlines every stage of his career, where he was great growing up in Atlanta. He was going to Florida, seemed to be the guy who was going to succeed Tim Tebow before, obviously, things went south. Growing stages at JUCO, awesome at Auburn. So really, this is the first time he's been doubted over the last decade. So I just think he's going to come out on a revenge tour, man. And he's got Belichick, who's won 6 Super Bowls, more motivated than he's ever been. People thinking it's all Brady and that things are going to go to crap in Foxborough. Josh McDaniels didn't get the interview with the Panthers. He was set the interview the day after Matt Rhule got the job. Didn't get the interview with the Giants either, so he has something to prove. All of it spells Patriots winning the division, Cam being the quarterback doing so, and that might be enough for him to win the MVP. The only guy I'd say I'd like as an MVP candidate more than Cam is Russell Wilson. And it has some DiCaprio-like effect to it. Same thing for Drew Brees. Those two guys haven't won it before. And they're in position where they could have special seasons, make the playoffs. So I think Cam's the best value at 25-1. I don't think he's the favorite to win the MVP. Best value pick. I wouldn't take anybody for less than 15-1. You're just not getting your money's worth there. I want to shift things. You got the Washington Redskins announcing news that's 4 days old. It makes sense when you're decades behind when it comes to the tolerance of your team name. It only makes sense that you're 4 days behind the news cycle. Dan Schneider is really bad at this. That's what we're learning here. Adam Schefter broke the news last Thursday where he said, there's not going to be any Native American references in this new name the Redskins have. They're going to move off of the Redskins. So we thought, team announcement, Monday morning, oh, they're going to tell us what the new team name is. And they just tell us that they're going to be officially changing the name, which is just a remarkable thing to do. Dan Snyder, he can't read a room at all. He's the guy who thinks, you know what? Here's what will cheer things up at a funeral. Let's sing some karaoke. You know, he doesn't know where where everybody else is at. It sounds like he doesn't even watch the news.
Who's up first? Comfortably numb? Anybody? Grandma? Come on.
Hey, you know, Pa would have loved us singing some Louis Armstrong.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea.
If my grandpa was here, he would be really old.
What's also amazing about the statement they made today, it's like three paragraphs long. We all know that corporate sponsors threatening to pull money is what forced Dan Snyder's hand. FedEx, which has its brand on the stadium, said that if they don't change the name, they will pull their sponsorship money away from the team. And Nike not selling its stuff on the website, going to pull from the Washington football team as well. That's what ultimately did it. But you don't tell people that. Publicly, you have to be like, it's for the fans. We're listening to our fans. We're doing what's right. We were listening to Native Americans, all this. That's the thing you should say in the statement. But somehow, in a three-paragraph statement, they decided to be so obvious, make it so clear where their priorities are. They listed the people that they are doing this for, and they have for our sponsors, comma, fans, which is literally Washington and Dan Snyder telling you that they put their sponsors before their fans. Do you want to read the sentence?
I did. I was looking for Shane McMahon's entrance music just to play the money, 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 money.
That is what it's about. They put their sponsors before their fans. But amazingly, that's not the most Redskins thing that Dan Snyder did as he's trying to distance himself from the name Redskins. Usually, if you know you're going to be searching for a new team name, you would lock down some trademarks. Days before David Tepper officially got the license for a Charlotte MLS team, he locked down some trademarks. We saw it. It was public information. Dan Snyder did not do that. Do you know who did? An Alexandria realtor. Who now, I mean, she's locked down. He or she, I don't know why I made it a she, has locked down all these names that people are suggesting. Washington Red Wolves, Washington Tribe, Washington Red Tails, Washington Monuments, Washington Veterans, Washington Renegades, Gridiron Football, Washington Braves Professional Football Team, Washington Red Tails, Washington Freedom Fighters, Washington Freedom Fighters, there's multiple, Washington War Hogs, which Robert really likes, Washington Red Tailed Hawks, Washington Potomacs, and the Washington Radskins.
His name is Philip McCauley. So we can say he now. So we know who it is.
Washington Radskins. Can you imagine?
Tie-dye unis.
Can you imagine if the big change to appease Native American people and to seem tolerant, Dan Snyder comes out with a graphic that turns the E into an A. Redskins.
Complete with Bill and Ted. They would make like a montage for this that was so like...
Dan Snyder probably thinks that's what kids still say. Oh, they're all saying rad. They're going to like our team. Redskins, that's what we're going to do.
He couldn't have thought that that was... Is that what the Radford... Is that what their mascot is? They should be the Radskins.
They are the Highlanders.
Ugh.
The best name's Red Tails. It just is. It has red in the name. The Redskins, one of their logos, it was an R already, so you can keep that branding intact if you would like. Keep some things consistent. the military connection, the patriotism tie. Ron Rivera says that he wants the name to have something involving the military in it. That checks that box. So I know it's what everybody's saying, but Red Tails is the best name that's available.
Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Robert, how quickly did you binge the Unsolved Mysteries Netflix series that was posted last week or launched last week?
I have not watched it because everyone's talking about it. I thought
you told me earlier you did.
I watched it, the original show, not the Unsolved Mysteries that they've posted to Netflix.
I watched one episode, and I had to watch them all on Saturday, and that's what I did. And what's great is, usually, each of these stories that were talked about, in a normal sense, would take up 5 or 6 episodes to talk about and break down every piece, and they would really milk it for what it was worth. I just love that each one had a different story and it was 45 minutes and we could move on to the next one. It required me to do some Reddit and some Google research after each episode to figure out some of the details, some of the facts, but just really interesting stuff. I'm not surprised that this is something that's trending in a major way, but it had me thinking. What are the greatest unsolved mysteries in the North Carolina sports scene? I've had people send in a ton of different examples of things, including T.A. McClendon, was he in 15 years ago? But I think I got the top three here, so this is what we're going to do. Robert, what really makes these dramas, it's the music that you're about to hear like right here. I mean, when you think of the X-Files, you think of that theme song and you start getting goosebumps.
Or goosebumps. That music was also very scary.
Yes, it was. I think this qualifies too. So let's dive into the first North Carolina sports unsolved mystery. Did Roy Williams know about the AFAM classes? I think he did, but he also knew it was wrong and got all those players out of the classes as soon as possible.
I could give a about North Carolina right now.
You got to remember, the biggest charge against him was levied by Rashad McCants because he took some of these paper classes, and there were a handful of guys in 2005 that did benefit from them. But that was Roy Williams' second season in Chapel Hill, coming from Kansas. By the time the 2019 won, nobody was in the paper classes. So it wouldn't benefit North Carolina or Roy for it to be public knowledge that he did know about it in 2005. But there is evidence that suggests, unlike Butch Davis, when he learned about what was happening, that the athletes got out of those classes in the next few years. That's how I feel about it. Second unsolved mystery. Did Cam Newton give up in Super Bowl 50? This fumble is going to be brought up till the end of time. I didn't realize until looking back and researching it this morning that it was a 6-point game when he fumbled that ball. Do you know that?
Did not come to mind.
Less than 5 minutes left. 16-10. What do you believe?
I still think he purposely did not jump on that fumble without knowing the score or knowing it was the 6-point
I've
game.
Done a number of slow motion replays to look at this. DeMarcus Ware was already on top of the football from Cam's vantage point. Ryan Khalil was also at his feet as well. Bad thing. Quarterbacks, they're taught not to injure yourself or else a RG3 situation could happen to you. Plus, that ball squirted away from Ware and Khalil. He would have had a better shot at getting the football if he was standing where he was than if he dived on it in the first place, because T.J. Ward ended up recovering it at the goal line to effectively end that game. But for people thinking, oh, if Cam got on that ball, they would have won that game potentially, it would have been, with 4 minutes left, fourth and 15 from your own 18-yard line against the best defense we've seen in a decade. Good luck with that, especially if Mike Rimmer's playing right tackle. I feel like Cam did not quit in that spot. And furthermore, I think Carolina punts the ball in that spot too, don't you? Knowing Ron Rivera, they had timeouts.
His name's Riverboat Ron.
Yeah, usually on fourth and one or fourth and two. But at your own 18, defensive-minded conservative coach, he's punting that ball away, especially against Denver's defense.
I'll play a little devil's advocate here. One, you said you don't want an RG3 situation.
Don't play devil's advocate. This is what you believe.
Okay, this is what I believe. RG3's accident where he got hurt with Haloti Ngata was a scramble, not for a loose football. If he would have jumped on that football, the ball changes hands whether he gets hurt or not, and Cam played with such reckless abandon for his body. You can't tell me that he's worried about getting hurt on the ground when he's getting hit almost every play he plays.
You're thinking about the wrong RG3 play. I'm talking about the playoff game against Seattle.
Okay, well, the one he got hurt in...
Well, he got really hurt. He broke his leg.
Haloti
Ngata. Against Seattle.
Yeah, it bent around his body.
But and it was against
backups,
Seattle.
Their backup... Haloti Ngata didn't play for them.
Well, I'm saying this is a playoff game. They didn't play in a Super Bowl, Robert. This was in a playoff game.
I understand that, Josh. But I'm telling you, the first time he got hurt, the big hurt, was not scrambling for a ball. It was Haloti Ngata. Cam Newton could have dove on that ball and gave them a much better chance of winning than turning it over.
Third unsolved mystery. Did Tom O'Brien rush Russell Wilson out of NC State? Russ claims, he said this in a Wisconsin commencement address, that T.O.B. told him he'd never make it in the NFL. He's too short. However, it seemed Tom O'Brien asked Russell Wilson after the 2009-2010 roughly, hey, do you want to come back or do you want to play baseball? And Russ said he wants to play professional baseball. He was drafted by the Colorado Rockies. Then, right as spring practice is ending for NC State and they have Mike Glennon, who went on to be a draft pick and played and started in the NFL, he said, you know what? I feel like playing college football again. T.O.B. was like, wait a minute. We just went through our entire spring. We molded an offense around Mike Glennon, which is a lot different than an offense we'd mold around you. So he said, no. You had your option, and you chose baseball. And then Russ decided to transfer to Wisconsin. That is the truth, but Russ has been selling something completely different. Those are unsolved mysteries of sports.
Next time we should get to if Golden Tate really did hook up with Russell Wilson's wife.
There are a lot of them that people have thrown at me I didn't really feel like going into. Like Delonte West and Gloria James.
Oh, God. Yes. That's
I know
exactly
that's where
I
you
want to
head. That's not where I want to go.
That's who the Lakers should be. If I'm playing LeBron James' first game of the playoffs, I'm signing Big Dog every time.
Delonte West?
Yes. Yeah, that's who LeBron is going to face. Or he's gonna
if
have
that
to least...
team gets past the first round, is Gloria James going to be the one guest they're allowed to bring?
Sure.
Or that Delonte's allowed to invite?
Once he gets cut from that team, I'm going to sign him. He's going to sit on the bench every time you get dunked on, every time somebody hits a three.
Yeah.
He's going to be clapping.
Tyler R. Tynes did the Cam Newton podcast series. He's been working on this for over a year, going to his college stops at Gainesville and in Auburn, even went to the community college in Texas he played at, the JUCO, in addition to his hometown of Atlanta. There was even an instance, Robert, where Tyler, with Cam and his children in the gallery, Cecil, remember, is a preacher, was invited on stage, surprising Tyler, to speak in front of the entire church. If you're working on this podcast series, how do you react to that? That's something we will talk to Tyler about. Also, after we get done talking to Tyler, there are more numbers out there about the Panthers offense. People are starting to come around, national media starting to come around about what Carolina has with Joe Brady, with Teddy Bridgewater. There are a lot of good signs about this Panthers offense I really want to get to. But I enjoyed this podcast series so much. It's really good. You can find it on Spotify. We're going to spend some time talking to the man who wrote it, the man who did all the reporting for it, the man who hosted it. Tyler R. Tynes from The Ringer is going to join us to talk Cam Newton next on The Drive.
Want to become a real sports fan? Leave it right here.
It turns everyone it touches into raging psychotics.
All things sports. Well, sometimes. On The Drive with Josh Graham.
I've been looking forward to this podcast series for about a month now, since The Ringer announced it. It's called The Cam Chronicles. And I even woke up early this morning to try and binge this thing. And it's 6 episodes documenting each stop of Cam's career to this point, dating back to him being from Atlanta, going to Gainesville, going to junior college, going to Auburn, the Panthers, and now what's next, of course, him being with the New England Patriots. Tyler's done great work on this. He's been working on this story for over a year. Follow him on Twitter if you haven't already, at Tyler R. Tynes, T-Y-N-E-S, or Tyler Ricky Tynes, excuse me, is where you can find him. The podcast, you can listen to all of them on Spotify, but it's also on the NFL's Ringer, the Ringer's NFL football show that they have. Tyler, before we get into all the Cam Newton stuff, I just want to paint a picture here. You visited Cecil Newton's church, and I understand that you were asked, with Cam and his children in attendance, before the gallery, to go on stage and address Cecil Newton's church. Tell me exactly what that scene looked like and what was going through your mind.
Well, I mean, you know, it was exactly what it sounded like, you know. I ain't come there for that. So it just happened to be what it happened to be. You know, if you know anything about Cecil Newton and the Newton family, you know, we can get a little eccentric at times. And so, like, father like son. And so that's a church. I was a guest. He wanted me to come up and say a few words. I obliged the man, and it was just one, you know, one moment of a very long few days.
What did you say?
I mean, you heard what I said, you know, for the podcast, for the documentary series, for Spotify right now.
That's all right, that's right.
Make sure you go binge it. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't know if that was the full degree.
No, that's the full degree. We ain't holding nothing out.
That's tremendous stuff. I want to play for you something that Bill Voth, he was with us not too long ago, talking about Cam, and he's covered him his entire career in independent cases, in print settings, television, and now he's been behind the scenes, Bill Voth. And this is what he had to say when we were talking about him exiting the Panthers and how Cam would like to view his legacy.
He's most proud of, and that he doesn't think he'll ever get enough credit for, is how he's paved the way for future black quarterbacks who can act proudly black. And, of course, I can't pretend to understand, to know him at that level, but I understand. I tried to understand what he was saying there, and I do understand it. I think the black quarterbacks that came before him were expected to act how quarterbacks act, and Cam didn't want to do that. Especially, he was very proud of being a black quarterback.
That's also something Jonathan Jones said on one of your podcasts as well, a part of the series. What do you make of that, and also what Cam hopes that his legacy might be up to this point?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, right? Obviously, Cam Newton is a figure, you know, not only in Charlotte but nationally, that has had complications and complexities when it comes to how we view race and racism in the nation. And so Cam is both a vanguard for the new class of black quarterbacks that have come through the league right now, you know, sharp, stunning, fashionable, everything that you could desire as a black fan, really. But equally, Cam dropped the ball to a lot of black folks in Charlotte during 2016 when Keith Scott was murdered by police. And so you do have a complicated figure in that regard. And so I can't specifically speak to if that is what Cam wanted to do. The only thing I can say about Cam in that specific regard is that Cam grew up in a very black family, in a very black city, in a faith that afforded him the opportunity to be fashionable in a way that a lot of black kids and children aren't able to. And he got to the main stage, and he never forgot that. He wanted to be a trendsetter. He wanted to be a cultural icon. It's something that, you know, anyone who's worked with him has said for years about the last decade of who he is in football. And so it is much more complicated than just, does Cam or would Cam want to be an icon to this set in class of black quarterbacks? I mean, he's trained and coached them himself. I think it is a little bit easier to say and a little bit, you know, more accurate to say that no matter what Cam does, no matter what his beliefs on the matter are, he is going to be one. That he held a position for such a long time where he was the black quarterback of note. And whether you agree with how he feels about race and racism or whether you, you know, don't back it at all, that was who he was. Michael Vick was the same thing. Steve McNair was the same thing, and so on and so forth. And so no matter what he believes, he just is in that regard.
We're being joined by Tyler R. Tynes on Twitter at Tyler Ricky Tynes, the podcast series he's been working on over a year called The Cam Chronicles. It's really good. Find it on Spotify. 6 different episodes going through a lot of different things. But help me understand the resentment that exists for Cam within the black community, stemming back to what he said 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, where there were white fans who probably were scared or afraid of the way that he plays because of how different it looked to what was in the past. And then you mentioned the violence with the police shooting in 2016 leading up to a football game against the Vikings and Cam sidestepping what seemed to be a lot of social issues. How is he viewed right now?
I mean, again, blackness isn't a monolith, so I can't speak for how he's viewed right now by an entire group of people.
Sure.
All I can say is that Cam is who he is. And a lot of the folks I spoke with, and a lot of the folks who still live in Charlotte, and a lot of people who did interviews in the last year, they didn't forget what Cam did in 2016. They didn't forget the pivot from 2015 to 2016 when it came to terms of how he identifies with his own blackness. What I will say, though, is if you meet his dad, if you meet that church, if you've been in that family, you might understand a little bit more about where he's coming from as far as that. And so there's you know, that's the most I can really say on the matter is that, again, no matter how Cam's outlook toward race and racism is, no matter if every black person in the country hates Cam Newton, he will always be an icon for what he stands for. See, the thing that we got to understand is that Cam Newton, we call this person Superman, but his greatest strength wasn't his size or strength or stature. It was his dissonance. It was his willingness to not conform or bend to the ideals that come with the NFL ecosystem. And so every time he walks out of that tunnel, just like Ariel, the black quarterback who's in primetime and wins the MVP trophy, he is a walking protest. Nobody can take that away from him.
What is the biggest misperception that exists with Cam? Because the root of your project is trying to understand his polarity and why he is the way he is.
I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, you got to think about how we consume professional football and sports in general. If the black athlete is always seen as the moral scoreboard in our rat race toward equity in America, then a lot of white people, both press, fans, and those in between, view black people a very specific way when it comes to race and racism in America. Cam fits into that mold, right? And so we have to understand within that same acknowledgement that he's not always going to be the person that you want him to be, right? And it's not fair to him whether we believe or we don't believe if he's going to be the person to be, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, these different black athletes are not always going to be the most progressive people, and they don't have to be. They don't always have to speak up on issues, and they equally don't have to be. And so that's kind of where I view him at now, and I say all this to say that when we think about these athletes, when we think about Cam specifically, we think that, you know, the smile is fake and that he's arrogant or that he's cocky and all of these different superlatives and misnomers that have really never been here if you talk to the guy or talk to his family. So the thing you come away with when you sit with him, when you go to his church, when you eat with his family, when you see his humanitarian work, when you are around him for more than what might feel like a 2.5-hour football game, is that the dude is authentic. He's made a lot of mistakes in his life. He'll be the first to tell you that he does and that he did. But he's not looking back. And you can appreciate some of that, right? The simplicity and the appreciation of it. Because he is who he is. He's going to grow from all the mistakes he's made, which have been several, by the way. And he knows them. And he's still going to try to kick it with you the same as he was in 2011. But he wants to grow inch by inch in between.
One thing that you noted in the podcast that's so true, and I'm glad you hit it, was that Cam went into the league saying that he aspired to reach icon status, celebrity status, as we're being joined by Tyler R. Tynes on Twitter at Tyler Ricky Tynes. The podcast again, Cam Chronicles from The Ringer. You can find it, The Ringer's NFL channel. Is I'm interested in what you make of what Cam's next step is going to be after football, because he's shown interest when it comes to being a producer, being doing television shows, Nickelodeon, being on game shows. What avenue could you picture Cam Newton exploring when his football days are ultimately finished?
Whatever one he wants, every single one that's available to him as an international superstar. You know, this is the thing. You know, a person like Cam Newton, you can't confine him to just one thing. And so Cam has a bevy of interests. He singularly does love football, is devout in his faith, and loves his family, enjoys being a father more than a lot of other things that he's mentioned. And so I am sure that whenever football is over for Cam Newton, whether it be this year or 10 years from now, there's a calling for him in whatever it is that he wants to do. I couldn't tell you what that is. Only Cam could. And I'm sure that thing changes every single year. But we shouldn't limit the world to folks like Cam, right? The entire world is out there for him to explore, and he's more than willing to do whatever he wants as far as that, just like his football career.
Have you gotten feedback from Cam or Cecil on it?
Haven't. Don't need it either. The thing about me, I would say, is that, you know, my pathos in all of this is to tell my most, you know, transparent American truth. And that's a very black one, and that's why it encompasses a lot of diaspora when it comes to blackness in the United States and how we tell stories about these black folks who are very underwritten about by a lot of our press, people nationally, and for the history of how we do journalism. And so at the end of the day, I need to meet the moment. I need to be true to the ideas and to the people that I am, you know, writing about and keeping my career about. And so whether Cam Newton enjoys the project or whether Cam Newton doesn't, I won't lose a wink of sleep about it as long as I know that we've done him right.
Right
and
on.
I very much believe that we have.
Well, I agree with it. We've covered his entire career, and he's a very difficult person to understand to some. And I think this is the best example of somebody capturing what exactly his intentions on some things might be and capturing his journey. It's tremendous stuff. It's the Cam Chronicles. It is Tyler Ricky Tynes on Twitter. Tyler R. Tynes, kind enough to join us from The Ringer. Thanks for doing this, and congratulations on a really long project finishing up and being something that's truly great.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. Y'all go get that thing on Spotify, all 6 episodes. Binge it right now. I need to know about it. Come on.
There you go. And shoot him a follow as well while you're at it. At Tyler Ricky Tynes. There he goes. Tyler R. Tynes, kind enough to join us here on Sports Hub Tryant. I binged it all this morning, Robert, and there was a section of it that made me pretty emotional earlier today that I didn't expect to be a part of it. As you know, one of our good friends on this show is Jordan Rodrigue, Carolina Panthers beat reporter who now is going out west to be LA Rams beat reporter. There, Tyler, here's how all-encompassing this was. They even covered when Jordan asked a question about route running, and Cam laughed it off, saying it's funny to hear a girl talk about routes, which then put her in the crossfire as people dug through her Twitter and found something from 6 or 7 years ago where I think she was quoting rap lyrics or laughed at a racist joke, and all of a sudden she was under fire. And it's the first time I heard her speak about it. And she's been a friend of this show for a long time, and I know how rough that was on her. Hearing somebody talk about contemplating suicide who's a friend of yours, it's that was really tough. But that's just an example of something in this series that speaks to the honesty of it. There are a lot of examples like that. So binge it, as Tyler said there at the end. It's just really good stuff. Transitioning things. There is an example of national media starting to come around on this Carolina Panthers offense this year. Bill Barnwell, when it comes to analytics, he follows it closer than anybody, I think, in the national sphere that is reputed. So he ranked the NFL's best and worst offensive arsenals 1 through 32. And the Carolina Panthers come in at number 5 on his rankings, ahead of the Atlanta Falcons, ahead of the Philadelphia Eagles, ahead of the Arizona Cardinals, which just brought in DeAndre Hopkins, ahead of the Buffalo Bills that just brought in Stephon Diggs, ahead of the New Orleans Saints with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. It makes sense, doesn't it? Like, the 2018 rank of the Panthers offense was 17th. Last year, it was ranked 22nd in the same ranking. Now it's ranked 5th, where you have DJ Moore coming back, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel, upgraded quarterback play. I don't think it's unrealistic at all that this Panthers offense finishes inside the top 10 this year. The difference between Carolina and the top 10 a year ago is 25 yards per game. They were 19th in the NFL. 19th with Kyle Allen playing quarterback and Will Greer the final month without Ron Rivera. They were punting the entire month of the year and they still finished 19th in the league in total offense. What do you think they're going to do with Joe Brady and Teddy Bridgewater? I saw a video. I got excited about this. Teddy's IG. Not nearly as fun as Cam's IG, but Teddy throwing to Robbie Anderson, starting to get some of those reps in. I'm excited, man. Do you want to guess the top 5 offenses in the league or the top 4 after Carolina?
Sure. San Francisco?
San Francisco, not in the top 5. Yourself an X there.
I was trying. Obviously, Chiefs and Ravens, I'm guessing, are going to be on there.
Well, you got to remember, these aren't the top offenses. They're just the top
yards.
Arsenal. Like weapons. That's what this says. Because the Niners rank 18th on the list. That's what this is. It's like best receivers. It's essentially best receivers and running backs.
Okay.
So, like, offensive line isn't factored into this. Otherwise, San Francisco would be very high up in that. Baltimore's
not. I don't want to guess it anymore then.
Yeah, Baltimore's not in the top 20. Actually, they're 20th.
Which is goofy, but okay.
Number 4, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay.
Evans, Godwin, Rashad Perryman. Actually, they just lost Rashad Perryman.
Yeah,
didn't
he's
they?
On the Jets.
He's a Jet. OJ Howard, Cameron Brait, Gronk. Dallas Cowboys, number 3. You add CeeDee Lamb to Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper.
That's all you add.
That's pretty good, though.
I mean, yeah, but they still have a tight end. But anyway,
Zeke Elliott,
number 2.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. When somebody wants him to be, he's pretty good.
Is Jason Witten not playing anymore?
He's a Raider now.
Oh, that's right. Cleveland Browns.
Woof. Okay. You want to know what I got in?
I mean, there are a lot of weapons on Cleveland.
Jarvis Landry ain't like that, and Odell Beckham had a duty year last year. Do you want to know what this is?
Kareem
officially
Hunt,
ticked me off.
Nick Chubb.
They wouldn't know how to use two good running backs if that was all they had on offense.
Austin Hooper, David Njoku. Number 1's the Chiefs.
They have Sammy Watkins might not play. Like
Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman, Damian Williams. Don't poo-poo on this list because the Panthers are 5th.
I'm not just doing it. 5th is a little rich for my blood for them anyway, but this is the goofiest list I've ever heard of.
And we do a top 10 list.
Yeah, who is the last ranked team? Let me try to guess that.
Oh, this is actually fun.
I'm going to have to
guess the bottom 5?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to say the Jets. All they have is Bell.
The Jets are 29th.
Okay, Jets are 29th. Redskins
are worst.
They are the worst.
So you're pretty good at this.
Okay, I'm going to say it depends how they like the Dolphins, because they have no running backs. They have one good receiver.
Yeah, the Dolphins aren't
great, but they're higher than the Ravens.
Which is also goofy. The goofiest thing I've ever heard. Whose offense, non-quarterback, would you rather have right now? You would rather have the Dolphins skill players or the Ravens skill players? Who is taking that? The other
actually, you were right. They're 30th. I just didn't see them.
Okay. You just like ticking me off. That's what it is. You just like seeing me.
Yeah, okay, you're pretty good at this. So you guessed three of the bottom five.
Two more. I want to say the Bears, but I don't.
The Bears are 28th.
And
so there's one more in the bottom five. That's 31st.
Come on. Giants?
No. They're tanking, Robert.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Jaguars.
See, they have a lot. They have more than the Giants do. Giants have Saquon. Golden Tate, who stunk it up last year.
What are you, Russell Wilson's hype man? What do you got in Ticket to the House?
It's going to bring a whole new definition to mine.
All right. That's next on The Drive. Sports fans often confuse talent and influence. Like, when Colin Kaepernick was disregarded because of how he was declining as a passer, I'd constantly have to remind people of this fact. Talent is different than influence. Kaepernick today has more influence than Matt Ryan ever had, for instance. When it comes to Cam Newton, while I don't believe he's the best black quarterback to ever play in the NFL, I do think he was the most influential. We'll talk to Tyler R. Tynes next hour about this, who's worked the last year on this Cam Newton podcast series, The Cam Chronicles for The Ringer. It's really good. It outlines every single step of Cam's career. But I just started thinking about how we're going to remember his legacy. Because I think we take this part for granted now. We no longer count how many black starting quarterbacks are playing in the league. I think even when Vic was playing a dozen years ago, we were still doing that. We were still looking at, oh, there's Vic, there's McNabb, there's a handful of guys, and we were still counting them. That's probably part of the reason I think Vic is the most influential black college quarterback. We were still doing that in the 90s when Charlie Ward was at Florida State and it was Andre Ware at Houston winning a Heisman. But when Vic proved it wasn't a shtick, it was he's a tremendous passer in addition to being a great runner. He's going to carry Virginia Tech to a national championship game against Florida State. We no longer cared anymore. We stopped even counting how many black quarterbacks there were across the league the way that we're now doing that with head coaches across college football and across the NFL. Like, Vic, it's not hyperbole to say he single-handedly got Virginia Tech into the ACC. If it wasn't for him and the timing of it all, Virginia Tech's not in the ACC. It's amazing how quickly they rose up through the ranks. But think about last year in the NFL. The best quarterbacks in the sport. Lamar Jackson won the MVP. I think the second most valuable player last year was Russell Wilson. After that, I'd probably say it was Deshaun Watson with the Texans. The best quarterbacks in the NFL now are African American. Pat Mahomes, oh, I forgot about that guy. And he's the best of the bunch. We just don't think about it anymore. And we did, I feel like, when Cam was entering the league. Mike Vick, he played in Atlanta. Cam Newton embodies Black Atlanta. Now, I won't begin to understand or try to begin to understand everything there is about Black Atlanta, but in reading constantly about it and listening to people who are from there, when they see the bright suits, it's not abnormal. When they see his personality, the showmanship, the dancing, that all comes with Black Atlanta. It's a part of the culture. Cam wasn't afraid to take that to the most fragile and white position we had in major sports, the quarterback. Like, if Cam was doing the same thing in the NBA, I don't think people give one rip. LeBron, him taking the power, Russell Westbrook, what he wears, Kevin Durant and the book bags and the fake glasses, nobody gave a rip in the NBA. But the NFL, there is a certain expectation that a quarterback acts a certain way. And Cam just wasn't really interested in doing any of that. He railed against it because it wasn't who he was. And this was intentional. When Cam, this is something that Tyler Artines discussed in the podcast, Cam was proudly black, proudly Atlanta, and when he scored, he wanted that displayed. He wanted people to know that. He wanted that to be a part of his legacy. Bill Voth covers the Panthers, has done so in an independent capacity, a print capacity, a TV capacity. Now he's working for the Carolina Panthers. So he had special access to Cam. He was on our show a few months ago when Cam left, and I thought this was a really illuminating answer about him.
He's most proud of, and that he doesn't think he'll ever get enough credit for, is how he's paved the way for future black quarterbacks who can act proudly black. And of course, I can't pretend to understand, to know him at that level, but I understand. I tried to understand what he was saying there, and I do understand it. I think the black quarterbacks that came before him were expected to act how quarterbacks act, and Cam didn't want to do that. Especially, he was very proud of being a black quarterback.
And that's why he gets ripped. And that's why there is a racial element to the Tennessee Titans fan writing that letter to the Charlotte Observer. There was a racial element to the way that he was criticized after the Super Bowl. White quarterbacks, they didn't receive the same scorn. But since Cam took a lot of this heat, I feel like it opens the doors for guys coming in, for Pat Mahomes to play freely and play differently, for Russell Wilson to open up his personality a little bit, for some of these players to speak out on what's important to them, because 5 years ago, Cam was simply saying, I receive a lot of this criticism because I look different than any other quarterback who's played this position. And that can scare some people. He said that 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson, he could do all the fun things that he does and say big trust and all these things. Cam, he is influential at that position in a way very few are or have been over the last few decades. I think he's the most influential black quarterback in NFL history, but it's something I'm interested in talking to Tyler Artines about. We've got Let's Get Crazy in less than 10 minutes. Bruce Smith getting a lot of attention from Family Feud, and rightfully so. If you missed this, this is the NFL Hall of Fame defensive lineman and former Virginia Tech Hokie, and his interaction with Steve Harvey.
If Captain Hook was moonlighting as a handyman, he might replace his hook with what tool?
A hammer.
Try again.
A penis.
Tell me the age a kid is too old to sleep with a tent. What did he say?
How do you default to that?
That might be better than the naked grandma response.
Do we need to see if the answer was right?
Depends what kind of handyman he is.
I mean, screwdriver.
It's easy in hindsight, though. I mean, when you're on there and the pressure and the lights are bright.
I feel like I'd be great at this game. I feel like Family Feud, Speed Round, I'd be awesome at it.
You would not be awesome at pronouncing the name because it is the Fast Money Round.
Fast Money Round, sorry. The one that's like 30 seconds. Yeah, I'd be great at that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you think you'd be so great at it, because when I heard this, I know how you are. So I pulled a lightning round for you to play, and we can see. What do you here for the team to win? Two people go, and they try to get 200 points. So
okay.
I break it up as if both partners can get 100, that's a good round.
You know what? I think you're right. It's harder to be the second one, though.
Oh,
so if you
sure
want to score 200, I feel like the first one has to do the heavy lifting. So if I score over 100, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try and shoot for like 110, 115.
All right. They actually give the second person a little extra time. Did you want extra time for this? Or?
No, I don't need the extra time.
All right. 30 seconds on the clock. These are tough now. It's a lot of reading. So I'm not going to be so strict with your time limit, more about your points. But let's start off with this one. Name an occupation a bad driver should avoid.
Taxi driver.
Name something specific that people make reservations for.
Dinner.
Name something that a woman never forgets about her fiancé's marriage proposal.
Location.
Name something that a burglars check to see if the family is out of town.
Dog.
Okay. Name something people do to corn.
Chuck.
All right, that's it. That's it. You finished at 29 seconds.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty good. I don't feel great about the pet answer, but that's the only one that I didn't feel awesome about.
All right.
So, taxi driver, dinner, location, pet, chuck corn.
We'll go through it right here.
Okay, all right.
To start off with, you said taxi driver. That is the number three answer, and that scores you 21 points.
Oh.
That's good. It's a fifth of what you needed.
Okay.
That's good. That's good.
What answers were better?
Truck driver and a bus driver.
Okay, truck and bus. Got it.
Name something specific that people make reservations for. You said dinner. That was the number one answer.
Yeah!
That gets you 35 points, and right now you are sitting at 56 points. Two answers and you're halfway there. You did pretty good to start off with. Name something that a woman never forgets about her fiancé's marriage proposal. You said the location. That is the third answer. That gets you 22 points. Still on pace. Number one was the way he asked her, and number two was the size of the ring.
Okay.
Fourth question was, name something that burglars check to see if a family is out of town. You said a dog. There are only four answers, and that is not one of them. Number one was checking the mail. Number two was the lights are off. Number three was no car in the driveway. Number four was newspaper piling up.
Okay, so the drama's building right now. I'm at 78.
I'm glad you did the math. I did not do that yet. You need 22 points. Actually, 23 points because you said over 100.
Yeah, if I get over 100, I'm feeling pretty good. Shuck corn. I feel good about that too.
Something people do to corn. Shuck is not an answer. Husk is. I will accept husk.
Yeah!
Husk is the fifth option.
Oh, no!
Only giving you 5 points.
Oh!
So you're a little short. 83 points. I actually really, really enjoyed this game. Number one answer was pop with 41 points. Number two was eat. Number three was boil.
I should have thought of eat.
On the cob. It's what I thought of too first. I don't know how many people were saying pop. What's something you do to corn? Oh, I pop it.
Is
no,
this
you
a
don't.
Canadian edition?
Yeah, come on. What are you doing? Four was
pop
cook. Five was husk.
Corn, eh?
Six was butter. You finished short, but, I mean, if you got a second teammate, they're going to come in there. And you only got, what, one number one answer?
Yeah.
So they could come in there potentially and save you.
I make no excuses.
You want me to go and see if I can win us the thing?
Yeah, I think you'd do pretty well knowing the rest of the answers.
How about
we get to some hot takes, though?
Oh, I like that.
Let's get crazy. I actually had someone tweet me over the weekend saying, I can't wait with everything that's going on right now. I can't wait for the Let's Get Crazy segment. Bring it. If you have hot takes that are just stewing based on everything that's happening in sports, and quite a bit is happening, 336-777-1600 is the number. You can tweet us at SportsHub. Try it if you'd like as well. We get crazy next on The Drive.